Welcome. It is Celeste here with Hannah on the Sales Edge podcast. I'm really excited to talk to Hannah today about sales enablement, all the myths. It's widely misunderstood and how she takes a holistic approach to enablement. So Hannah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. Happy to. Thank you so much for having me on. Super excited to chat with you. I think you'll find that most enablement folks could spend our day talking about the industry and the role itself. So glad to be here. I have been in the role of enablement for a handful of years now, but like many, I started by carrying my own bag. I did more field sales back pre-COVID days and traveling and hitting the road, and then transitioned and decided, you know, as much as I love sales as a career, where I really had strength was as a relational seller. And I thought it would be kind of that easy and strong transition to shift into the enablement world. I love to just help folks be their best self. I have a lot of experience in the SaaS space. That's where I've kind of lived and breathed for most of my career. I spent a lot of time in healthcare and have recently shifted into more of the financial space. At the end of the day, enablement folks are really solving for a lot of the same pains and problems and doing a lot of good same stuff throughout different industries. It doesn't really matter where you work as much as kind of the team that you're supporting. So
yeah. Tell us about how you entered the role and your holistic approach.
So this isn't even just necessarily new to this role. I would say a lot of what I excel at is coming into places that maybe either have never had an enablement person, or they have had a small team that's focused on specific things that aren't necessarily as holistic as an enablement program might be. And so a lot of what I do and what I've been doing in my current role is coming in and just kind of getting a lay of the land. And so that's what I always tell folks when they're like, well, what does the next 30, 60, 90 days look like? And like, we have to start with getting kind of that foundational overview. So I talk to, and right now I support both the sales team and the CSM team. So kind of the whole revenue pre and post sales group, but probably just for the purpose of this podcast, I'll focus on mostly that sales enablement side. And so really just talking to my sellers, getting in, understanding like, what are we doing well? Where are they feeling some of the pressures? And you can do that a number of ways. I've do surveys as well, so that there is a little bit more anonymous feedback allowed, so that we can get to the bottom of like, is it a metric we need to focus on? Is it more of a training perspective? But a lot of times there are gaps that are, they don't need to focus on training first, right? Like maybe it's, for example, we have all this great content, but we don't know what's most up to date. We don't know where to find it. That was something that I recently came across. Well, there's no need to train to stuff if we can't find anything, or if we can't figure out what's the most up to date resource or deliverable that's being built. And so a lot of it's just bringing a culture awareness to what enablement is, right? It's, yes, it's training, especially on, I'm a team of one, so I don't have a training specialist or a training role. I am a enablement slash trainer slash fixer of broken things. But at the end of the day, we have to sit down and prioritize. And part of that is, what can we do first that's going to allow us to have more substantial, impactful training? What I've been doing is, first, it's almost like reactionary enablement. What are the fires we have to put out so that we can then shift and do more of what I call prescriptive enablement? Mm-hmm.
I love that, prescriptive enablement. And I think you hit the nail on the head here of, we can't stay in this place where we're constantly band-aiding things. It's very hard to grow an organization that is all band-aided together. You see a car that goes down the road and it has all the fixes and the band-aids and the different paints and the doors. Like, eventually that's probably not going to run. And it's not so dissimilar for an organization. We aren't getting to the root of what's actually going on. We're just putting a temporary fix on it. How do you juggle between the temporary fix and then really carving out time to get, like you said, prescriptive of, all right, this is the root, this is what we need to focus on in a couple steps back before we move forward?
It's a challenge, right?
Definitely a challenge. Sorry, I think my internet cuts in and out here.
Sorry, I think I lost you there for a second.
So I think, how do you put a Band-Aid on?
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, I always like to tell folks who are new to the role, maybe if enablement's brand new to the organization or within its first year of getting legs, it's okay to come in and put some Band-Aids on, because a lot of times that is necessary. It's literally, you got to stop the bleeding. But once you get through some of that initial band-aiding and learning your stakeholders, learning how they like to work, learning your sellers, learning how the organization is moving, that's when you're able to start and make more strategic changes. So the way I always try to explain it, especially to folks who maybe aren't as familiar with enablement, is you go to the doctor and they're like, okay, well, you have a headache, like take some Advil, right? Like that's a Band-Aid. Instead, what enablement does is we come in and we say, okay, well, let's look at the CT or MRI, right? Like let's take some blood work. Let's take what we can and partner with stakeholders. So I always say RevOps and product marketing are my absolute best friends. How can we then take the data and partner with folks to then, you know, go and build actual prescriptives, where I kind of say prescriptions, right? Mm-hmm. Like an actual plan that is part of working in enablement. But at the end of the day, like I have started at this point saying, like, where is this request coming from? Like, there's a couple of basic questions. Where is it coming from? What is the identified gap? How many people have we seen this in, right? Like, if it's something that I haven't noticed, like, is it coming from a certain manager? Is it like team specific? Is it org specific? And then at the end of the day, like, if this was solved for, like, what are the actual measurable outcomes that we would hope to see on the other side? It's maybe just like a one-on-one coaching with a manager or a quick process change with RevOps. And so that's something that's super important for new enablers, I think, to consider as well, is just a couple questions as you try. You mentioned, like, how am I prioritizing? It's hard. You will never have a perfect system, but like asking leaders to think through, like, what is the end goal will allow you to then determine, like, is this going to be the most impactful thing I can spend my time on right now?
Yes, I'm sitting here laughing because from a gap selling lens and from discovery, as you know, being in sales, coming up through sales, it's exactly what we want our sellers to do with our buyers. We want to understand what's currently going on. We want to understand their desired future state, right? This nice place where everything is fixed and what do we want those outcomes to be? We want to look at the gap, what's preventing us from getting there? Like, can we live with this? How often is it happening? All those questions that we want our sellers to dive into in order to be able to make a case. And then I'm laughing because it's like exactly what we'd want to do with our internal stakeholders as well, to go through that process. So I think it's awesome that you have that awareness to say, like,
yeah,
all right, let's take a pause here and start assessing like a doctor would. I can't give you a diagnosis until I have all of that information. So I love that, like the prescriptive point of view. You can have to trademark that or something.
You heard it here first.
So when you get pushback or there isn't alignment between...
I lost you.
Yes, I'm clearly having some internet issues. You can hear me now?
Yes, since you can.
Okay.
Yeah, you're unblurred, so that's a good sign.
It's fine. I mean, it'll upload to the cloud. I live in an area where my only option is cable internet and I have the highest speed. We don't have fiber yet. So
yeah,
it ebbs and flows. All right. What happens?
I would say it's choppy for me.
Yeah. What happens when you have various, maybe let's say product marketing or RevOps, when everybody doesn't get in line or they're not on the same page, how do you mediate that in order to achieve a common goal?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think what's so important is that if you work in an organization where everyone was smart people, we do what we do best. Luckily, I work with some fabulous people who we collaborate more than we fight, right? I think to me, the harder part is when you have actual end user stakeholder requests. Like that's where sometimes more of the struggle can be, like, okay, I have multiple VPs vying for something, or we have differing of opinions on, like, I want to use a medium of an assessment or a certification. But of course, sellers are in the weeds saying, like, I don't have time for this. That's kind of where I have had more difficulties. But even from RevOps and product marketing, I think it's about sitting down and identifying, like, what do we do best? And if I, like, I always joke, especially it's hilarious now that I work in finance software, like, I don't math. I say that all the time. Like, you did not hire me to come in and do revenue operations. Like, that would be horrific. I truly need our RevOps person to say, here is the data, right? Here's the hard facts. And then I can go in and do my job well and say, okay, based on this, we've identified, let's use the example, right? Discovery. Like we've identified that we're having all these opportunities that are falling off between discovery and demo, right? Like this isn't an example of my organization now, but this is a random example. So that's when I come in and I say, okay, RevOps is giving me this data. If we are noticing there is like a conversion issue, a metric issue, right? That's when I then go to product marketing and say, okay, I'm going to do this, you know, part of this. And again, I work on a small team. So there's me, there's one RevOps person, one product marketer, and one enablement person. So for better or worse, there's some gray areas. And so we honestly have an open conversation. Like, do you normally in your past roles, has this been something that you've handled? Or as we look at doing this training, you know, I'm going to focus on the facilitation. I'm going to focus on the process to improve this, but like, I need you to come in and speak specifically to the higher level market impact or the persona impact. It's really just about open conversations. Like if you're working with folks who are at least experienced and have worked for maybe larger, smaller, across the gamut orgs, what have you seen work and what can we do to divide and conquer to solve this? And then it usually irons itself out. Mm-hmm.
So yes, I would say you hope that individuals work in an organization where there's collaboration and people are willing to take things on. I love to hear that you all have this openness of, hey, sure, we have this common goal. Let's work together to peel back those layers to figure out how do we work through this towards something that's going to be impactful. I'm curious, given the environment that we're in, lots of layoffs, sales teams across the board, not making quota, lots of increase in sales activity, win rates are on the decline. How are you supporting sellers so they stay engaged, willing to work through kind of these ebbs and flows of the economy and buyers who are pretty tough these days as far as pulling back the purse strings? How do you fit into that kind of non-tangible piece of like motivation?
Yeah. You know, it's tough, right? Like at the end of the day, it's tough because I am not their direct report. I do not hold their job in my hand. I do in the way that I support them, but I don't make those decisions. And so I think that's where it's hard on enablement because we literally get up every morning wanting to make our sellers more successful. Like I find joy in seeing my sellers be more successful, whether that is in the numbers, but also to your point, like a mental motivational side. Sales is friggin' hard, right? I've done it. And especially like you said, in this day and age. So I think part of it is like being open to, and I know I keep bringing up feedback, but like empathy and feedback. And I know we'll talk about that more at the end, like some of those things that set me apart and where I see I get set apart. But like, I try to look at it through the lens of like everyone. So like, what are my sellers feeling? What are my managers feeling? What are our VPs feeling? And then all the way up, like, what are the C-suite feeling? And then addressing problems based on that. And so I like to have open dialogue, like whether it's at the end of a session or taking time at one of us, like a stand-up, like 10 minutes and doing a pulse check, like, what are you hearing? What are you feeling? So yes, like I can also identify like part of that can be an emotional struggle. Like they'll phrase it as like a role struggle or a skill struggle, but like, it's also about like numbers. If numbers are down, like that's defeating. And so being able to, I think, address that and say like, you are not off the mark here. Like you are valid in what you're feeling. Like, let's see what we can do to support you in that area. I also try to always, and again, I have the blessing of not working in a massive company. So like, this is going to be dependent on like how many people you support, but like, I always have my Slack available. I tell people like, if you want to set up a coffee chat, I work hybrid. So the days I'm in the office, I'm like, if anyone wants to take a walk, like I do that. I offer that avenue so that I can also talk to them on like a humanistic level. Like I'm no one special. Like I can't necessarily, you know, I'm not going to be able to change the economy. But sometimes it just helps to like have that person to have some of those more general conversations. Sure. And some people, they never need that. They never want that. And that's okay too. But I just keep the door open.
You're not like HR. I used to be in a very similar role where I was a regional. The people didn't report to me. I carried their KPIs and was responsible and held accountable for their output. But it was really more of like a support and a coach, and definitely had a lot of conversations that were on the like morale and what can we do versus like what's happening to us, what's happening around us that we don't have any control over. So I love that it's like almost part therapist and coach and like facilitator. It's like this catch-all.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it becomes this catch-all role where you have to like put up some boundaries of like, yeah, it's starting to push the line a bit. But it sounds like you've created a welcoming environment. Yeah. What about, my final question before we get into like the last two questions that I ask is around when, is more so around you as an enabler of, how do you keep yourself sharp and continuing your own learning outside of like your role so that it helps to, I guess, helps to keep your brain abreast of like what's happening with others in the role, what's happening in the economy, what's happening in the profession. What do you lean into?
I think there's two things there, right? Like I hold myself accountable to like, if I'm asking my team to learn something, like I need to ride along and make sure like that I know it as well. I think that's also really difficult when you are new to an organization, a new enabler. Like that's where you have to, and anyone who's interviewing enablement team should definitely ask this, because you have to get up to speed as quickly as possible. And that can be difficult. And so I think that, you know, leadership needs to be wise about giving new enablement folks the time to ramp. And because if we don't ramp, you're going to struggle with that later. And having an enablement person that maybe doesn't have the full breadth and depth of like your product, your personas, all that good stuff. But from like an enablement skill development, it's like the first one that I think some organizations have come together and put on, but it is truly the most supportive group of people, I guess, because by nature, that is our job. And we pour into others so often that it's nice to have just like I've had multiple coffee chats. Like now those are like 25, 30 minutes. I'm maybe not learning anything and everything, but it's nice to be like, well, what are you doing? What are you seeing? Like what's worked? Sometimes it's just like, hey, I have a dog. You have a dog. So from that like mental side, like there's also that. So I always like to try to open myself up to that. I think the other thing is looking for organizations. So there's a ton out there. There's like Women in Enablement. There's Enablement Squad. There's UpNotch. That's like a mentorship community. I have no affiliation with these people. I'm not going to get any kickbacks, but I have gone and I've gone through like mentorship. I've gone and been more like, I actually have a chat this afternoon with someone who's a former teacher looking to get into enablement. Yeah. Like it's just such a give get community that we're open to that support network. And so that was a really long answer of basically saying like, I try to connect with folks who do what I do because I am a team of one. I don't have that. Unfortunately, I would say there's pros and cons, but like, I don't have that team to like go and do a brainstorm session with internally. So I have to be proactive enough to go and find that externally. And then also just like you shared something with me earlier that your team's worked on, like the speed model. Like I was like eating that up. I was like, I love a good checklist process. Like anything I can find, you know, like I love it. Like that's, people are so willing to share that stuff, like stuff they've worked. I mean, obviously it's not internal. We're not all sharing like things we shouldn't share, but like things that are like more basic learning models, like we are able to talk about
that. Yeah, absolutely.
Love that life.
Yeah, it sounds like being a lifelong learner and being a sponge and open. And it's that fine line because you are in this role that constantly has to be adapting because the way our teams sell, how buyers buy, it all is shifting and changing.
Yeah.
And in order for you to support your team, it's like you kind of have to be one step ahead with them or in the trenches with them learning so that you can help support that behavior. So this is probably why I gravitated towards you on LinkedIn, because I thought like, oh, here's someone who's actually helping and sharing value, which is a selfless thing to do. It's not always tied to an outcome. Sometimes it is just sharing best practices and helping to build others up and like lessons learned of things you wish you knew earlier in your career. So thank you for sharing that. As we close out, I always like to ask guests two questions. The first would be, what is a sales myth that you want to bust?
Yeah. So I thought about this one and it's going to be funny given that I'm an enablement, what I'm about to say, but process matters. Absolutely. You have to have a framework and a process, but process and frameworks are not everything. And so as an enablement person, there are places where there's nothing in place and it is pure chaos. Establish that baseline, that best practice, put it in motion. But I'm a firm believer that you have to allow folks to nurture their strengths. So the age old strength finders, if you've done it, most of us have at some point in our career. I'm like a firm believer that, again, like enablement exists because there's gaps and there's needs. When I was a seller, I was a relational seller. I was not like your hard and fast challenger. Mm-hmm. Like I was more about really building that front-end relationship and building that trust so that I could then offer the best solution based on what I learned. And so that's what I did well. I know people that are literally, there's someone I worked with years ago and she was more of your soft-spoken seller, like very data-driven. And at first when I was young, I was like, what is this person doing in sales? And then I would watch her and I was like, she is so good at being able to come in and like factualize like why things matter, pull in the data that matters, like speak to, again, you can pull your DISC or your, any of these sessions that we've all done to learn about ourselves, but like one mold does not fit all. Like there are people that, you know, respond better to different things. All of this is my roundabout way of saying like, yes, have a best practice, have a process, but like give your sellers some like rope to go off and like be their best selves, like and work as a manager to develop that, because if not, they're more than likely going to fly the nest anyways and find an opportunity that will allow them to.
Yeah, having a process, we like to say a methodology where individuals can be their authentic self, but kind of know like what that home base is. Everybody has the same foundations. Then you're going to have other people that take it in multiple directions. I think it's important. Yes, you can't manage everybody the same.
Yeah, like this is a super basic example, so stay with me. But like pulling the same page, my grandmother's 91, she loves a color, right? Like taking a page out of a coloring book, there's a picture you have to, whether it's, maybe it's even paint by numbers, like you have something, but let people choose crayon or marker, or like let people do some like swirls or some blues and some reds, whatever they want to do. Like at the end of the day, the picture's going to get drawn. The thing's going to, you know, but you have the outline, you have the paint by numbers, but you give them just some of that.
Leverage, great. Totally great example. I'm with you on that one. I love it. And then the last one goes hand in hand with this next question. We all bring something that's unique. I was told a long time ago, like, how can you be in sales? You're not a cheerleader. And I was like, look at my team's numbers. Really, that's all that speaks for itself. Like I'm not getting complaints. The team's happy. I'm just outwardly not, I'm like an introvert. I'm not like, it's super uncomfortable to me. So all of us bring that kind of unique factor to a position. What is your, I like to call it your sales edge?
So it's funny because I feel like mine's not, people talk about this word a lot and I alluded to it earlier in the podcast, but like I truly am an empathetic person. But what I mean by that is I'm really good at reading the room and understanding like what my sellers may actually need, or if there is someone that maybe isn't understanding, but they're not as confident and comfortable to say so. It also kind of helps me with some of that friction that you spoke about earlier, because again, I'm lucky I have some collaborative folks, but like we're still human. Like I was talking to my husband the other night, I'm like corporate, like you're with people at work more than you are with your partner or your friends. Like there is just organically going to be some headbutting, right? Like, and I'm one, it's so funny. I always say I'm really nice until I'm not. So like, I will speak up when I need to speak up. And I have had moments where I've had to dial it down. So like I say empathy with still the caveat that I can be bold when needed. But I think just recognizing that sometimes people are just having really tough days or really tough weeks, or like, you know, again, going back to like being able to read a room and understanding like this person, for example, it's funny you say you're not the rah-rah. I talk a lot. I joke, I get paid to talk. So sometimes I have to tone it down. I need to be more, maybe not on this podcast, we haven't got there yet, but I need to be more succinct in order to reach this person. And some people just don't think like that. But I do that because again, I know that I'm not going to reach everyone the same way. And I think that's the hardest part as an enabler or a trainer, is like everything you do isn't always going to resonate with everyone that you're speaking to. That's why you have to try different things and teach in different ways, build different types of resources, consider, you know, like you were mentioning earlier, going out and learning other ways of doing things, because then at least at some point along this timeline of working with your team, like something's going to hit. So I would say that with a caveat, I learned long ago from my mentor to speak up more. And so, you know, you be bold when you need to, but at the end of the day, like people matter and we're here to support.
We like to say like, don't lose your human, don't lose your human. And it's interesting you say about that empathy piece. One of my mentors early in my gap selling process, she'd be on a discovery call and she's like, did you notice how so-and-so like leaned back? And I was like, no, how are you seeing that? And I think it's because until you get further along and especially for sellers in a comfort level of, okay, I understand the information I'm looking for in discovery. I'm feeling more comfortable with the business acumen if it's a new industry or a new market. And now it's like that up level of, okay, I'm going to start looking at people and their reaction.
I mean, listen, we train to it, right? Mirroring tone. Like, that's literally what it is. We talk about it all the time, but you're right. It's like, you got to get to the point where our sellers are so focused on that checklist or the right thing to say or one objection ahead.
And it's really hard. Signature. I can do it so much better in person. Like, if I'm training and I notice somebody doesn't get something or like their head's down, you know, Zoom. Yeah. Freaking impossible to see like everybody's tiny little face, especially if there's 30 people on the Zoom. Like, are they leaning out? Did they turn their camera off? Like, is something going on? I don't know. Am I on track? I do feel that that empathy piece, I mean, for myself, it's something I'm trying to work on a little bit more. Even yesterday with my sister, I saw my sister here and we're not huggers for some reason. And I was like, okay, let's hug. Like, we're practicing trying to embrace each other now because we've just never done it. I can hug my daughter and my husband, not a problem. But when it comes to my sister, it's just weird. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to flex this new skill. And if I practice it and it's reinforced multiple times, like, it's going to become a second habit.
Oh, I love it so much. Little steps, right?
Well, I have totally loved our conversation today and can see how, like, yes, I'd want you to be my enablement person, like just this warm yet firm, supportive role. And I hope that our conversations continue after this podcast. I will share Hannah's information on how to link with her on LinkedIn. She is pumping out content that is relatable that we can all pick up and use. So I appreciate you sharing that and being open and vulnerable to what is happening in the sales world and enablement world today. So thank you so much for being here on the Sales Edge.
And yeah, anyone in the local to Charlotte, North Carolina, I'm always up for in-person chats. If not, please connect with me on LinkedIn. And Celeste, this was fun. I get paid to talk. So here we are in a podcast, the same thing I love doing. So I appreciate you.